Hello, Big Brains listeners. We're taking the week off to spend the holidays with our families, but we think this is a perfect moment to re-release one of our most important episodes. As we all dig into our delicious Thanksgiving dinner, we need to remember that not everyone is so lucky. Global hunger is still a massive problem facing our society. But one researcher may have engineered a way to tackle this problem with science. Please enjoy, and we'll see you in 2 weeks for another brand new episode of Big Brains.
Humanity is facing a ticking time bomb.
It's a staggering number, 9 billion. That's the estimated world population in 2050. And perhaps most daunting here, how will we feed that many people?
By 2050, we're going to need a 50% increase of food supply to sustain the population growth.
50% increase, that's a lot. Especially when we already have trouble feeding the world today. And food production is responsible for about a third of the greenhouse gases that cause climate change.
Now, what we see in the world is we're destroying rainforests or wetlands so we can grow more crops and other economic plants, right? This in turn contributes to global warming because we have less forest to soak more or fix more carbon dioxide.
In the scientific community, there's been a race against the clock to find a solution to this problem. And that voice you're hearing may just have found part of the answer.
Our hope is to show the world this works, and it's really up to different laboratories, companies, and other entities to take this technology forward and hopefully make the world better.
This is Xuan He. He's a distinguished professor of chemistry at the University of Chicago. You may hear his name in connection with the Nobel Prize someday. And if you do, it will probably be because of his discoveries around something called RNA methylation. And it's this discovery that may hold part of the key to our food shortage problem.
Almost a billion people around the world don't have enough food to eat. That's according to the United Nations World Food Program. But in a potentially world-changing discovery, scientists led by a team from the University of Chicago have found a way to manipulate RNA to boost crop production by a lot.
This is something I personally could have never dreamed about when I started working on RNA methylation back over a decade ago.
But the uses of RNA methylation don't stop at food production. They could also lead to a new cure for cancer.
We have lots of unpublished data suggesting that RNA methylation is a critical way for our immune system to sense and to cope with the presence of tumor.
We work to make sure that every Big Brain episode has exciting breakthroughs and research, but the implications of his work are jaw-dropping. It's one of the rare moments when you see a possibility to use science to tackle some of the biggest challenges that are facing our world.
That's sort of the dream come true, right? I think as a scientist, our research is firstly driven by curiosity. But as every scientist will tell you, right, we also really want to see the social impacts of our research, right? Not only just to satisfy our own curiosity, but also, whatever we work on can better the world.
From the University of Chicago Podcast Network, this is Big Brains, a podcast about the pioneering research and pivotal breakthroughs that are reshaping our world. Today, the powerful secrets of RNA methylation. I'm your host, Paul Rand. Most of the work, Xuan, that you have been doing, it has to do with RNA. I'm wondering if you can give some folks just a biology course backgrounder on what RNA is, since they may have forgotten it from their basic biology.
Yeah, if we think about our high school general biology course, in the central dogma, DNA is converted to RNA, and RNA is converted to protein. So DNA is where all the genetic information is stored, right? Now, if we visualize this as a computer, DNA would be the memory, right? Stores all the information.
Okay.
Protein would be the hardware, right? That's the one that functions and does all the work. And what's RNA? It's a software. It connects memory to the hardware.
You've talked about some of the most important work in the well-known discovery. It has to do with something that's called, if I'm pronouncing this word right, RNA methylation. You've said that this actually ushered in the modern era of RNA modification research. And so I'm wondering if you can tell me what RNA methylation is And what did you mean by that quote?
Yeah, Paul, unfortunately, that's going to be a longer story, because if we want to understand that, we'll have to go back to Central Dogma. In human, remember, we have something like tens of trillions of cells in the human. All these cells come from one fertilized egg. What that means is inside of you or me, our cells share almost identical DNA sequence. Yet we have 200 different tissue cell types, right? It's kind of mind-boggling the way we think about it. Our skin cells versus our liver cells, our brain cells, they have exact same DNA sequence.
Obviously, brain cells are very different from skin cells. But if their DNA is the same, how are they so different?
The difference is, it turned out, at the modification level, the DNAs, the proteins, can be chemically modified. Now, what about RNA? We asked this question in 2010, and in 2011, we showed indeed the RNA methylation, a form of a chemical mark on RNA, can also have this broad gene regulatory effects, just like the DNA and the histone modifications.
There's a lot of complicated science here, but it basically comes down to this. It turns out that RNA doesn't just blindly deliver the blueprints that DNA gives it. RNA can actually regulate which part of that blueprint gets carried out or not. RNA methylation is basically the process of marking what those parts are going to be.
If you do not have RNA methylation, most stem cells will stop differentiate. You won't be able to get mature tissues. The embryonic stem cell will stop development.
No RNA methylation, no difference between brain cells or skin cells.
It's essential to human development. The second part of this is each cell will need to communicate with other cells and environment. It turned out that communication really rely on RNA methylation.
Okay, so what does this have to do with food and cancer? Some of you may have put it together already. If you can go in and actually use the process of RNA methylation to control which parts of the blueprint get expressed, you can radically change living organisms.
So as I said, the hallmark of RNA methylation is essential roles for stem cells to differentiate into cells. Now, a hallmark of cancer is basically, during human early development, cells differentiate or grow or proliferate rapidly, but once adult form, we turn off those events. We don't want rapid growth anymore. However, a mutation or environmental factor somehow apparently turn on that switch that leads to development of tumor in many cases, right? Because RNA methylation is so critical to this normal development, it also critically impacts a variety of tumor initiation and progression. But the RNA methylation also is important to cell communication with other cells and the environment. One sort of system jumped to mind is the immune system. And okay, in our 2018 paper we published in Nature was the first one. It's actually really a tip of iceberg. We showed that RNA methylation is used by our immune cells to sense the presence of tumor and decide whether the immune system were eradicated the tumor or not. We have lots of unpublished data suggesting that RNA methylation is a critical way for our immune system to sense and to cope with the presence of tumor. So we're working on a variety of ways to modulate RNA methylation to turn on our immune system to get rid of tumor right now.
So explain, what is that in your mind's eye? What could that practically mean?
Right. So tumors are very smart. They figure out ways to evade the immune response. One way that does is to suppress RNA methylation. So even though there's a tumor, our immune system is supposed to get rid of it. But because of RNA methylation, our immune system ignores the presence of tumor so it can grow. So right now, we're developing ways to switch off that RNA methylation system so tumor can be detected by the immune system and be eradicated.
So if we suppress the RNA methylation, the immune system can actually do its job and attack and even kill that tumor?
That's right.
Oh my goodness. And so what does that actually practically mean? And what are the steps to getting to the point where you can say, for your cancer treatment, we are going to change the course of treatment to do this?
That's a great question. We have the IP, we licensed to certain companies in some cases, other cases we're still exploring.
He is co-founder of a biotech company now developing new anti-cancer medicines based on targeting RNA modification proteins.
Currently, if you take immunotherapy, right, about 40% of melanoma patients would respond to immunotherapy. The other 60% will not respond. In other cancer, the response rate is even lower, a few percent to 10%, lung cancer, breast cancer. So immunotherapy is great, but lots of tumors, we say they're cold. So they don't really respond to immunotherapy. And we realize the RNA methylation is one reason to make them cold. So they don't respond to immunotherapy. So in one direction, we have been developing small molecule inhibitors. So the pills that you get from hospital, if you are a cancer patient, you can take these pills in combination with current immunotherapy. When we come with a small molecule to turn that switch, many of these tumor or cancer not responsive to immunotherapy become responsive to immunotherapy. So that's sort of one direction we're currently working on. The second direction we're currently working on is really to take human immune cells, engineer them, rewire their RNA methylation system so when they go to the tumor site, they're not going to be suppressed by the tumor anymore, so they can directly attack the tumor. We're developing small molecules that can target this, and then hopefully these small molecules will go on clinical trials and eventually enter clinic.
That's just extraordinary. And so by the time this could go into trials, could be when?
I'm hoping 2-3 years.
After the break, a world-changing solution to food scarcity and climate change. Stay tuned. Hello, Big Brains listeners. The University of Chicago Podcast Network is excited to announce the launch of a new show. It's called Entitled, and it's about human rights. Co-hosted by lawyers and New Chicago Law School professors Claudia Flores and Tom Ginsburg, Entitled explores the stories around why rights matter and what's the matter with rights. There's a global problem that's been keeping many scientists up at night. We need to produce 50% more food by 2050 to feed an ever-growing global population.
One complication is if we continue with the current trend, we'll probably need more lands for producing food. That would mean we have less lands for forest and other ecosystems, right? That is a pretty significant problem.
So if making more crops isn't a solution, what if you could make better crops?
We realized that this interesting protein, FTO, play important roles in animal development. This protein works by remove methylation from RNA. So take the methylation off the RNA. If you don't have this protein, the mice will grow a little smaller. So we started to wonder, what about plants? Right, the plants have RNA methylation, and we suspect RNA methylation also play important roles in normal plant development.
So you are integrating animal FTO into plants. I mean, it's kind of a crazy idea. What were you thinking what might happen?
Well, in my lab, we always sort of, we love the weird ideas, right? That we don't expect anything out of it. I guess 95% of the time, my students were look at me and say, you're an idiot, it didn't work. But it's that 5% of the time, right? You're rewarded. So when we inserted this into rice, we had this, jaw-dropping observation that in lab, we actually see three-fold increase of rice yield. And later on, we tested in real fields that 50% increase of biomass, rice yields and everything. But the results were just totally unexpected, I would say.
And so the plants grew 50% larger than they normally do, or they produce 50% more rice, or both?
Well, they have longer roots. They grow a large number of roots and longer roots. And then they have 50% increased biomass. and then and proportionally they have 50% increased yields. And I want to say that there's a 50% increased photosynthesis and increased carbon dioxide fixation.
And when you get the product, which is the rice, can you tell a difference between this product and more conventionally grown rice?
We analyzed everything, protein contents, everything. They look identical. I don't know if we cooked them and ate them or not. Probably not, because they're trying to save the seeds for the next round of experiments.
Okay, interesting. And so it'd be interesting. I'm assuming if they have all the same properties, that it would taste the same.
I would think. I will go to taste the next time.
Okay,
sure.
Good.
I'm
glad I could contribute to your experiments in a helpful way.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so now you decided not to stop with rice. You thought that was interesting, but let me try potatoes.
Right, yeah, it's a totally different type of plants. So here in this paper, we report rice and potatoes, right? In each case, we saw a 50% increase. But we didn't stop there as well. We also tried other plants. We tried the trees, we tried the grass, and some other plants. Almost all cases, we saw this crazy growth phenotype.
And so can you just tell me what is happening inside these plants that is making them grow so much larger and be so much more productive?
That's a great question, Paul. We currently do not know the exact mechanism, but there must be a inherent or intrinsic pathway in plants to tune their growth, and then we somehow turned on that switch.
So here's the theory. Plants have a built-in system of using RNA methylation to tell their cells to stop growing if there's drought or a reason to conserve energy. So if you flip the switch on that built-in system, the plants take off.
If we go back to Central Dogma again, sorry to bring this up again and again. So remember in Central Dogma, it's DNA to RNA, RNA to protein. So somehow the DNA to RNA step, we dramatically elevated that step. We produce a lot more RNA out of DNA. And that leads to plant to grow larger, deeper roots. It generates more tillers, more branch, and a lot more biomass.
It doesn't take a scientist to see the massive implications of this work, not only for 2050, but right now. People in developing countries go hungry every day due to a lack of food.
In developing world, there's still a lot of space to improve the efficiency and perhaps the yield of the crops grow there. The development of modern agriculture could perhaps make up some of these gaps. And obviously, our discovery could contribute to that.
But it goes beyond just making more food. Food scarcity can also occur due to increasingly extreme conditions driven by climate change.
A mega drought in the West becoming a massive problem.
Now, Madagascar is paying one of the highest prices for climate change, which they have done little to cause. The toughest droughts in 40 years have left thousands on the island on the brink of starvation.
Guatemala now has one of the worst malnutrition rates in the world. This quiet crisis is being caused by climate change. The weather is now so variable, growing enough food has become all but impossible.
But Hee's plants may solve that problem too.
There are several benefits of these plants way beyond the crops. Remember, they have longer roots. They survive drought much better, so they can grow under more extreme conditions.
Because the roots go deeper.
The roots go deeper. So they survive better. Also, they solidify soil, so they will prevent, in principle, the spread of desert. Now, keep in mind, not only in food supply, when we have this population growth, we also have higher demands, not only from food, but also stock materials, the woods, rubber, you know, grass for cattle, etc., etc. All these are connected to our Earth's ecosystem, right? So these problems are connected. And with global warming, it's getting worse, because with global warming, lots of places, there is a spread of deserts, the dramatic reduction of wetlands, grasslands, and forest, right? So this is really a sort of a cycle that getting us into, you know, worse and worse. So it's important to come up with a solution with plants that not only provide sufficient food, but also sufficient stock material from plants. And lastly, some sort of plants that can help us maintain our forest, wetlands, and grassland.
Speaking of climate change, not only do Heath's plants grow 50% more, they also increase their photosynthesis dramatically, which means more carbon removal from the atmosphere.
The benefit of increasing photosynthesis, you fix a lot more carbon dioxide. So you fix more carbon, which is the building block for plants.
Okay, but what about people who are concerned about genetically modified plants or GMOs? Isn't this sort of like super GMOs?
Right now, we use genetic modification to show the phenotype. And we are working on, and we have preliminary results to show that we do not need to genetically modify the plants. So there are two types of plant engineering out there. One is genetically modified plants. Another is CRISPR gene editing of plants,
yes.
Right? The CRISPR gene editing is sort of much better accepted, right? This is really the third type. We're editing the epigenetics or the epitranscriptomics, but we're not editing the gene itself. We're editing the RNA. So the CRISPR system edits the DNA, and we added the RNA level, right? Now we sort of introduce the gene in, an animal gene to edit RNA, but we know a system that we do not need to introduce or leave the gene there. So we have a system very similar to CRISPR editing. We can change the RNA methylation without introducing a gene, so it's not genetically modified. That system, most likely when we apply to the real world application, we're going to use that system to avoid genetic modification. So what we work on is the intrinsic plant pathways, and all we will do is to turn on the switch existing in the plant.
It's doubtful that a discovery like this will be kept in a box for too long, and he is excited to see, if you'll excuse the pun, the fruits of his labor.
Our hope is to show the world this works, and it's really up to different laboratories, companies, and other entities to take this technology forward and hopefully make the world better.
If you're getting a lot out of the important research shared on Big Brains, there's another University of Chicago Podcast Network show you should check out. It's called Not Another Politics Podcast. Not Another Politics Podcast provides a fresh perspective on the biggest political stories, not through opinions and anecdotes, but through rigorous scholarship, massive data sets, and a deep knowledge of theory. If you want to understand the political science behind the political headlines, then listen to Not Another Politics Podcast, part of the University of Chicago Podcast Network.
Big Brains is a production of the UChicago Podcast Network. If you like what you heard, please give us a review and a rating. The show is hosted by Paul M. Rand and produced by me, Matt Hodapp, with assistance from Alyssa Eads. Thanks for listening.